welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Well, we have a special guest with us on the phone that's going to talk about a recent Supreme Court decision that came down in the decisions that came down in June as the court began its recess, and a long-awaited case on union dues, compulsory union dues, what's known as the Janus case, came down favorably for those who do not want their money to go to candidates that do not align with their political views, which has been the practice for many decades, and we're going to talk about that and break it down. With Robert Ault, who is the Buckeye Institute's president and CEO, it is a conservative think tank right here in Ohio, and they are involved in public policy. They do great work. Their research is often quoted in the Columbus Dispatch and before the Ohio legislature on the research that they do on a number of issues. But they were front and center on this decision, and let me read the statement that came out from Robert Ault. When the decision came down, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Buckeye Institute issued the following statement. The Supreme Court today in the Janus Apsky announcement, its basic rule of human decency and common sense. Consent matters, and in our hardworking public sector, workers can no longer be forced to pay for political speech or other activities without their affirmative consent. That is the statement by Robert Ault. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you. And obviously, I know you've been busy doing a lot of interviews in the aftermath, and this decision is actually huge because really union money goes, by and large, to support liberal Democrats in Congress and across the country, even state house races. And I have talked to those in teachers' associations, those who work in the private sector. This is, they just lament that their money is going through their union dues to pay and support political candidates that go run counter to what they believe. They like their job. They like the benefits that come with being involved with a union, but they do not like that the union, by and large, supports candidates that run counter to their political worldview. Your thoughts on that?
I've talked to union members all across the country, both before and after the Janus case, and it's interesting. Some of them just did not realize how politically active their unions were and how much they used their dues, even their agency fees. And let me break that out. Generally speaking, the Supreme Court a while back said you don't have to be a member of a union, but previous to Janus, they said you could be forced in non-right-to-work states to pay for your collective bargaining activity for chargeable expenses, so-called agency or fair share fees. And this is just supposed to be those fees that are the necessary collective bargaining. The interesting thing we found in the lead-up to the Janus case is how much even of those dollars ended up going to political activities. They funded things like the national conventions of the big unions, and at just about every single one of them in 2016, you had cases where the union was endorsing Hillary for president, where they were taking very aggressive political stances, supporting federal funding for Planned Parenthood, for instance, supporting particular policies with regard to immigration, opposing religious liberty laws in the states. So there were any number of very political stances they took, and a lot of union members, rank-and-file union members, I think, had no idea that their money was being spent for these purposes and that they had no choice as to whether or not to fund those activities. If they failed in a state like Ohio, which wasn't right-to-work, to pay those agency fees, then the school district or whatever public employer that they were working for would be forced to fire them. This is a tremendous decision in Janus that says, no, affirmative consent is required from public employees before any money can be taken and given to the unions.
Now, this is public unions. This decision is only public unions, not private unions, or is it both?
That's correct. That's correct. This just applies to public sector unions. So think about your public school teachers, folks working for state agencies, policemen, firefighters, things of public employees of that nature.
Would that also include nurses unions?
If in fact there are some nurses unions that I think would be public employees, and I think there are some that would be, for instance, at like a private hospital, that would be a private employee.
Right. So if they were working in a state institution, that would be a public union.
That could be. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that makes sense. If they were working in civil service, obviously as a nurse, then that would be a public union that they would be paying into. And again, these are monies and these are dues that were compulsory. Then they saw that same union take that money and support the candidate, the opposite candidate that they personally were going to vote for. And they're like, wait a second, why am my union money going to support the candidate that I don't support? Why are you doing that? I can understand, a lot of union members are probably saying, well, look, if it's on an issue or public policy that affects my job and our industry, that's one thing. But to support these candidates, that's an entirely different matter. Is that what the court basically determined in this case? Was that even brought up?
They did not reach that particular question a while back. So technically, the interesting thing is that the unions were continuing, through things like their conventions to endorse particular candidates, to pass resolutions saying, for instance, that they were going to go ahead and take all reasonable steps, and mount massive campaigns to elect Hillary Clinton for president. Again, something that they did, that entire effort at the convention was paid for with not just union dues, but agency fees, those fees that you couldn't opt out of. Technically, they're not supposed to be engaging in any direct political contributions with fees that individuals haven't consented to pay. A while back, they said you couldn't force someone as a condition of employment to actually pay into the union PACs, to their PAC money. You could force them to pay for collective bargaining. And so what Janice really went to is the fact that when it comes to public employee unions, it was Justice Kennedy who in asking one of the questions during the argument at the court said, look, you're talking about organizations that end up being pervasively political. Just about everything that they do in terms of collective bargaining ends up being on political questions of which there's differences of opinion. You're arguing for pension, with regard to pension benefits. Well, that ends up being a very controversial issue, particularly in a state like Illinois, which is about to go bankrupt because they can't fund their pensions properly. And
over in Chicago,
was contributing to the problem.
In Illinois, it's a terrible situation for residents of Chicago and Illinois, and with property taxes going up. And I mean, it's almost a seizure of property over there. I mean, it's really a crisis issue. You're right.
So in terms of that, the court looked at that and said, it doesn't have to rise to the level of direct political contributions. You're talking about spending people's money to support causes and candidates with which they disagree. This is what, if you remember, Thomas Jefferson talked about compelling speech as being tyrannical. Ultimately, forcing people to support speech with which they disagree. And that's really what was at issue in this case. Now, the interesting question now is what happens next? If you're a public employee, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Before you get there, I want to quote here from your op-ed. It says, the Supreme Court agreed with Janice that, indeed, consent matters, common courtesy, and basic human decency have always demanded it. But now, in overruling its own 41-year-old precedent in Abode versus Detroit Board of Education, the court found that the First Amendment requires affirmative consent when it comes to paying union fees, too. So the court really overturned itself in a 41-year precedent. Explain that.
Yeah, so I mean, 41 years ago in the Abood case, the court had said you can be forced. You can be compelled to pay these fees for collective bargaining, even if you disagree with the speech. And they did so because they found that the state interest ended up overriding. It was more significant than the First Amendment interest. And an interesting thing happened in the next 41 years. We got to see what happens when a number of states go right to work and how that operates. And so a lot of the claims that were made on the other side, that this was it was necessary to force everyone to pay the collective bargaining fees in order to maintain labor peace and the like, they found out that wasn't really necessary, that in fact you could grant people's first respect people's First Amendment rights, permit them the choice as to whether or not they want to support particular speech, and still have labor peace, still be able to operate your institutions. And so they found that, in fact, that decision was wrongly reasoned and wrongly decided, and they decided on behalf of Mr. Janus to the effect, actually, of granting freedom to public employees nationwide.
We're talking with Robert Ault, who is the president and the CEO of Buckeye Institute, a political conservative think tank right here in Columbus, Ohio. And if you'd like more about their work, you can go to BuckeyeInstitute.org. We're talking about the Supreme Court decision that basically in the Janus decision, which overturned the Supreme Court's longstanding 41-year position that union dues could be compulsory. They just flipped and said they're not when it comes to public sector unions. Robert, this is going to have a lot of ramifications politically as well. Candidate revenue streams of those on the left side of the aisle, Democrats, they're going to take a hit for this one because we can already see the clamoring already of the fallout of this. What's the future now? Where do we go from here?
Well, the future, for the first time in over 41 years, is in the hands of the individual workers. It finally actually is their choice as to how it is they would like, where they would like to see their money go. And, you know, it's one of these things, I think it, you know, we take a position very respectful of the First Amendment. You shouldn't be forced to support Democratic candidates if you're a Republican, or Republican candidates if you're a Democrat. You should have a choice with regard to this. You shouldn't be forced to support federal funding for Planned Parenthood if you're pro-life. You shouldn't be forced to support any number of positions potentially that the unions were taking. And I use those examples of both Republicans and Democrats because it's interesting. Here, Ohio is kind of unique, not so much in the public sector unions, but we can look at the private sector unions. And a lot of the trade unions actually end up overwhelmingly supporting the Republicans. I would argue the same thing that I argue on the other side. You know, if you're a Democrat and you're a member of that union, you shouldn't be forced to support Republican candidates if you don't
right.
want to. Just the same. So the great thing about the Janus case is, you know, rain falls on both sides of the aisle. In this case, it grants everyone, all those workers, a choice with regard to how it is their dollars are being spent. It allows them the opportunity to not support some of the political speech and activity and collective bargaining if they disagree with it.
Well, getting the message out to those public sector unions, is there a responsibility by state agencies then to put out a decision or to notify union workers of the option now? Is there something along those lines that's being done? Or is it just going to be business as usual until you find out if you find out? And if so, then you can file your objection to paying your due that would go to a candidate. Your thoughts?
Well, in terms of that, the Buckeye Institute is seeking to fill the void because it's not clear the extent to which the state agencies are going to step up and make sure that people know about their particular rights. At this point, if you were an agency fee payer, if you opted out of the union, and the union should already, and your employer should already be respecting your rights under the Janus opinion, they should not be withholding any more dues or fees. And that should be effective immediately. If, in fact, you're still having fees or dues withheld and you were an agency fee payer, you should definitely contact your union and your employer and ask them to cease that immediately. But the interesting thing is, despite the fact that the Janus opinion has some pretty broad language that talks about public employees and the need for prior affirmative consent before any funds can be diverted to the union, the official position of a number of the unions has been the Janus case does not apply to members. It only applied to non-members, to the agency fee payers. So if you're a member, they're asserting that you have to jump through all the same old hoops that were previously in place to opt out. And this means you have to, you know, send in a letter requesting to be to exit the union. You have to send it, you know, in some cases in triplicate, to different organizations and different individuals, and you have to send it at a particular time during the year. In a lot of cases, it's a lot for any one person to keep track of, and there are 3,200 separate collective bargaining agreements in place in Ohio covering public employees. As luck would have it, Buckeye has gone through all 3,200 of those to find out what is required for you to opt out. If you go to the website workerschoose.org, you can enter in some very basic information with regard to your name, where you work, et cetera, and it will go ahead and pull up all the information that you need to know in order to be able to opt out of your particular union. It will tell you who you need to send the letter to. It will go ahead and fill in the information for the letter that you need. It will provide you the email addresses of where to send it if those are available, and it will tell you the time of, you know, the time period in which you're allowed to submit it under your collective bargaining agreement. It is, we've worked with folks in different states. We've had numerous organizations say it is the easiest to use and best resource in the country on this issue. And we're pleased to be able to provide that for folks in Ohio. It also provides a ton of information about the case for people who have questions. And it respects the First Amendment rights of individuals. We're very clear about the fact if you like your union, if you like how they're spending your money, you don't have to do anything. You can keep your union under the Janus decision. But if you, to paraphrase the former president, but if you don't like your union and how they're spending your money, you have rights now, and you can exercise those rights.
Well, that's right, and I'm looking at the website right now, really well laid out and very simple, folks. Again, it's workerschoose.org. This is a project of the Buckeye Institute helping you to walk through the steps of basically filing to get out of your union so you don't have to pay those compulsory dues. These are for public sector unions. So, for instance, here, it also has a facts page with a list of questions. One of them is, I am a teacher or public sector employee. How does the Supreme Court ruling Janus affect me? It goes on, how do I notify my government union that I have decided to withdraw my membership? And again, it's just a 1-2-3-step process here of filling out the form on the workerschoose.org website that will get you started in that process, notifying your union that you no longer want to be part of it. And folks, this isn't, look, again, they're in no way able to pressure you or threaten your job. Talk to us about that, Robert, about what about those people who say, well, I don't want to leave the union. It's a fear tactic by the union that you don't want to leave. They've used this browbeating for years of employees. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, no, in terms of that, historically there have been issues with that. I think that with the Janus decision and with these rights being extended more broadly, there's something to be said, for the fact of safety in numbers, which is to say, I think that there's more and more individuals, who are going to be able to do this, and by exercising your First Amendment right, certainly your employer wouldn't be permitted to retaliate against you in any way for doing so.
I'm a public sector employee. I have health benefits as a public sector employee. I have my retirement and my pension plan. The union doesn't reflect any of that, right?
Yeah, and yeah, if, in terms of that, you know, whether you are a member of the union or not, you're entitled to those benefits for being a public employee. You know, the one question that I frequently have gotten from teachers is that the unions provide liability insurance as part of union membership. And, once again, number one, that's not required, but for those teachers who genuinely want that insurance, there are other organizations that provide liability insurance at rates far cheaper than what you're likely paying for your union membership dues, and we provide that information as well on workerschoose.org so that you can, and we provide a couple of options that we're aware of so that you can compare and contrast and see what the best option is for you.
Well, that's right. And again, we're talking about choice, the individual power of choice of the individual. And the Supreme Court just let freedom ring in the Janus decision. You've got to really be thrilled about this. This is an issue you've worked on for some time. You have to have some personal pride in this. Your thoughts?
We were very pleased. I mean, once again, this is a case that really does respect the individual worker in Ohio, as well as across the country, and gives them puts them in the driver's seat, which unfortunately they'd been deprived of for far too long. Where I feel like they were taken for granted. I really think that the old system, where you were forced to pay for views that you disagreed with, and if you refused to pay for those views, you were fired. That position is fundamentally un-American. And so this was a great victory for the First Amendment and a great victory for workers in this case.
Without question, and I've had these discussions with, as a pastor, with members of my congregation over the years, and saying, you know, Pastor, my union is forcing, and they use my dues to pay for candidates not to my liking. What do I do? And now in the public sector unions, folks, you've been set free. You no longer have to comply with that. And again, going to two websites, one, the BuckeyeInstitute.org, and what's the other website, Robert?
WorkersChoose.org.
Wonderful. Thanks for being my guest today. I love when a guest takes a complicated subject and simplifies it. You've done that, so you get an A+.
Ah, thank you. I take that as high praise, because as a lawyer, normally we take really simple things and make them more complicated. So,
thank you so much for being my guest today. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
Again, that was Robert Ault, who is the president and CEO of Buckeye Institute, a wonderful conservative think tank right here in Ohio, and they work in Columbus. They provide research materials to the Ohio legislature, the General Assembly, and for the general public. And in this instance, providing information on the Janus decision and how now you no longer have to be forced to pay compulsory dues in your public sector union if you don't choose to. And there is, again, a helpful website at the BuckeyeInstitute.org, and gives you an opportunity to make those choices yourself. And, of course, it gives you liberty as an individual. Well, thanks for joining us today. If you missed any of the program, you could always log on to our website at OhioCA.org and hear the program in its entirety. And, of course, your support of this program is also welcome. Thank you for listening. We come to you each week at this same time. Tell a friend, and also the podcast is available, again, at our website at OhioCA.org. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Well, we're heading into the midsummer season, and we're on school break, but we're going to talk about school issues today with State Representative Andy Brenner, who is the chairman of the House Education Committee, and State Representative Andy Thompson. Before we do that, of course, this week, breaking news with President Trump announced his replacement for the court as a position came open, as we had a retirement on the U.S. Supreme Court. And now we know who it is. It's Brett Kavanaugh is the nominee to the court, and there is overwhelmingly positive review about this candidate, is that he is a constitutionalist. He believes is looking at the law instead of making law. He was serving on the 12th Circuit Court of Appeals. He was an original appointment by President Bush. And, of course, the radical left is going apoplectic over this nominee. There are some concerns about him and some of his decisions. There's 300 of those decisions in which, of course, proponents and opponents of the candidate will be poring over as he is now working Capitol Hill and the U.S. senators to garner support for his nomination to the court. We're going to be breaking that out in detail and having guests on future programs to talk about this nominee to the court and what it means for the court going forward, but certainly another victory for the Trump administration as they get to pick now his second pick to the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, let's turn back to Ohio, as there was breaking news this week as a state Supreme Court member, that is Mr. DeWine, Pat DeWine, the son of Mike DeWine, the Attorney General, he announced that he was recusing himself from the ECOT, that's the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow's case before the Supreme Court, and he was recusing himself from this case and what that actually might mean. And then just yesterday, there was a major decision in an appeals court, and the appeals court basically came down with a decision in favor of ECOT, and this is very interesting. It says ECOT may proceed with an appeal on the $60 million repayment the court rules, reading from the Columbus Dispatch. ECOT won a court decision on Tuesday, but no, it wasn't the big Ohio Supreme Court ruling, according to the Dispatch. But the Ohio 10th District Court of Appeals ruled that the now-closed Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow, ECOT, can proceed with an appeal in Franklin County Common Pleas Court. This all began back in January as far as the closure of ECOT in the middle of the school year. We're going to take a little clip here as part of that press conference, because this really was a major moment in Ohio's history as the largest, what would be tantamount to the largest school in Ohio's history closing in the middle of the year. Let's go to that press clipping right now.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your comments on this. And we are at a crisis shutdown, similar to what was in Washington, only we have 12,000 students that are at stake who do not have a school as of today because of the decision of last Thursday night. And we are here today because there is a way forward. And if the parties will come together, similar to what happened in Washington, when the parties came together and averted a government shutdown, well, we're hoping that these parties will come together and avert the final shutdown of this school, which represents 12,000 students and nearly 2,300 graduating seniors. And they're today wondering what is their future. And so we're here today because we care. We're here today because they do have a voice. And that's why this has to be addressed. And we're asking the parties that are involved to come together, both ECOT and the Ohio Department of Education, the superintendent, and one other member that could really play a key role, and that is Governor Kasich. I have here today a personal letter to the governor that immediately following this press conference, I'm going to deliver personally to his office on the 30th floor at the Rife Center. We're hoping the governor will bring the parties together and find a workable solution so that ECOT can finish out the school year for the 12,000 students. Let's understand the magnitude of what we have here. 12,000 students is equivalent to a major school district in Ohio like Akron, Ohio, or Toledo actually shutting down in the middle of the school year. No one would ever permit that. But yet, because they can't be seen because it's an online school, and these are students who depend on this form of education for a variety of reasons. My family, actually, my wife and I raised 8 children. We're at the end of that line with our baby at home now. She's 17. She's actually at a public school. But we've done it all. We've done homeschooling, private school. We've done online school and, of course, public school. These are the school choice options currently in Ohio, as well as charter schools. But what we see in ECOT, and this isn't a referendum on the good and bad of ECOT, but that it represents a whole body of students and Ohioans who are accessing this school option, and that's why it has to be addressed today. That's why we're asking for the legislature, but more importantly, the Ohio Department of Education, and to sit down with the members of ECOT with the governor's office to work out a solution, and they need to do it quickly. Time is a wasting. As you know, that every day on the calendar year for a senior is critical that they get the requirements completed for graduation. So these are our future Ohioans that we're advocating for today. I so appreciate State Representative Andy Thompson, State Representative Andy Brenner, and of course the chairman of the Education Committee, who has been, as you can hear in his comments, he's been engaged in this. This didn't happen for him overnight. He's been actually prophesying for 8 months that we're going to have a crisis and there's a way to avert it. But for some reason, the Ohio Department of Education, the superintendent, ignored his warnings as to what might occur, as to what happened on Thursday night when the final agreement or offer was turned down by the Department of Education. The public has to wonder at this point that they pared back their payments to $1.9 million a month and then offered to sell their corporate headquarters valued at $6.8 million. It sounds to me that they were willing to do whatever it took to get to the end of the school year. Why did the department at that point just say no? And I think the general public understands that doesn't sound right to anybody. So that's why we're here today, is to advocate that this school be able to continue to the end of the school year. The other issues will be worked out along the way. Obviously, the court case is before the Supreme Court. That will be reviewed, obviously, and so those decisions can be made. But let's not forget about the 12,000 students. They want to know today, does anybody care? Well, we're here to say we do. We do care. Thank you, Representative.
And that was my comments at the press conference back on January the 23rd at the Ohio State House with State Representative Andy Brenner and State Representative Andy Thompson, who are with me on the phone. And gentlemen, we're fast-forwarding 6 months, and a lot of has been done since then. The ECOT did not reopen, unfortunately. Those kids were basically, it was a mismatch as to where they might have ended up, and some of them were getting reports were not able to get into other schools to finish up their school year. That is very unfortunate, very sad, and actually a travesty of justice, in my opinion, from the Ohio Department of Education, who ultimately is responsible because they did not take care of the kids. And then now we're looking at the courts and what's decided. Representative Brenner, your thoughts.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me on again as well. Yeah, there are several things. Actually, within the last couple of weeks, our Channel 10 news out of Columbus reported that there were 2,300 students that still hadn't been accounted for from ECOT by the Department of Education. And by my own calculations, 420 students who are disabled have not been accounted for. But yesterday we had the 10th District Court of Appeals come out and actually rule in favor of ECOT. This is, I think, one of the first rulings that they've had in favor. It says, and right from the reading, which, by the way, Jennifer Bruner, who's a Democrat, who is on this, wrote the opinion of the court. She wrote, we hold that ECOT is entitled to the opportunity to dispute not just the substantive and procedural merits of their action, which is already being done by declaratory and injunctive action and the Open Meetings Act litigation, but also to appeal the particular findings and decisions of the administrative adjudication, especially as to the clawback of funds already appropriated and distributed by the state of Ohio. ECOT's sole assignment of error is sustained. And then they conclude, basically, they have a right to go back and say that to appeal this ruling on the $60 million, and actually a total of $80 million, that the state says that they owed them. And so to me, that's a major, you know, that doesn't mean that the court is going to rule in favor of ECOT, but it does mean that they actually have to look at it. And they didn't even look at it up until this point. So I think it's a major ruling in favor of ECOT. And I think this also sets back all these people saying and rushing to judgment that they needed to claw back the money from all these from the school, when in fact they were at least following the law and trying to educate 12,000 kids. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, the Supreme Court still has to make their decision. That was referenced in this. And if the Supreme Court, you know, if they rule in favor of ECOT, then I question, you know, what's the state of Ohio going to do, especially given the fact that the school has been shut down. I know I've talked to a lot of parents of the kids of the school, and they would re-enroll their kids back into the school. So it's a very interesting and complicated case, and it's as you said, it's very unfortunate, especially for the 12,000 families who were disrupted in the middle of the school year, and then we're left now with, you know, 2,300 potential kids who we don't know where they went, and the Department of Ed has not been able to track them down.
State Representative Andy Thompson, back in January, we put a letter before the governor asking him for his involvement, and he basically washed his hands of it and said, I'm not going to get directly involved. Yet we understand after that there was communication on that same day that he wrote to the superintendent, urging the superintendent and the department to make sure that these kids get processed quickly into other schools, that he did not want to see anybody left behind. That mission was not accomplished. According to the report that Representative Brenner just indicated by Channel 10, 2,300 students still unaccounted for by the Ohio Department of Education. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think Chris, you and I have discussed in the past that, you know, they have to be accountable to some of the federal folks for the money that they receive as well, because there are funds attached to these students. And so, while at the same point that they're saying that these folks were not appropriately being attending school, they're trying to collect money from the federal government on behalf of these students. It's a very vindictive, I think, and very political-based approach to these students in this school. It was as if they really wanted to nail a scalp up on the wall, and they didn't really care about how they had to do it. And, you know, they try to, you know, point to this dollar figure, but, you know, I think fundamentally it goes back to how this oversight was changed, and then they applied it retroactively. And so without any real warning, all of a sudden they put ECOT in the penalty box, and they're trying to claw back this money and making it, trying to kind of blow the whistle and say it's some big financial penalty on the state of Ohio. the ones who are really paying the penalty are the teachers, the students, the parents, the folks who really relied upon this option as one that worked for them, and they had not found success or satisfaction in the public school system. So when you take that option away from them without any really easy logical alternative, you've really put a real burden on them, and you've really really pulled the rug out from under them. So go ahead.
Well, let's just also, this is a school that was showcased by Governor Kasich. He actually honored them and went to their graduation, spoke to the graduation services just a few years ago, and heralding how great of an option this is for special needs kids, for those who are maybe beyond school age,
that still want to
get that still want to get their diploma and get on with life. He was heralding that as a success, and yet turning around and basically trying to put this school in the grave. It just didn't make sense, and to close it in the middle of school year. So even if you had issues with ECOD, why close it in the middle of the school year? It seemed like a very vindictive move, and one in which the Ohio Department of Education and the school sponsor and those who, we would have to say, the Teachers Association and the Teachers Union wanted to see this school closed. They see it as a competition to what they're doing in public schools. And yet this was a viable option that 12,000 students and families chose to use to educate their children. Representative Brenner, you pointed out that this was heading that way. You forecasted and said, look, we need to deal with this now. You spoke before the state school board on multiple occasions in the months leading up to, but they seem to ignore your appeals. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they did, and it's atrocious. You cannot put 12,000 families in a position where they're going to have to scramble in the middle of the school year. But not only that, we had to put into the state budget, or not the state budget, but in Senate Bill 216, a temporary stopgap fix for a couple of the other schools who took in all of these students. I believe Ohio Virtual Academy took in 4,000 or 5,000 of the students from ECOD in the middle of the school year. Well, not only do the students need to learn now a new system and learn their curriculum and how they're handling it, they also need to it took them a month or two just to get into the system, and it was probably going to take them several months to get organized and understand the system and get caught up with the way they handle it. So doing this in the middle of the school year especially made a major disruption in the school year. So we had to put something in Senate Bill 216 that basically said that these students can be held harmless, or the schools can be held harmless for taking in these students because, they didn't have anywhere else to go. And in the case of a lot of these schools were already at capacity. They actually had to go out and hire a lot of the ECOD teachers in order to be able to take the students in. And then I spoke to those teachers. Those teachers had to learn the new system as well. So this was just a fiasco in the making. Yes, I was preaching. There were a bunch of state reps that were, trying to let the state board and the superintendent know. But they kept clawing back more and more money to the point where I had forced the Education Service Center of Lake Erie West to shut them down, and that's what happened. And to this day, we still don't know where some of those kids are.
Well, and there was a lot of collateral damage here, too, just not only the students and at-risk students that were trying to get their education, but also parents of special needs students and teachers. Let's not forget that. And the court basically ordering, and the overseer of the bankruptcy or closure of ECOD, he basically cut by one day short where the teachers would have had a full calendar year and gotten their health benefits. They were left without health benefits. I think that was an eye-opener, even to their liberal counterparts who may not agree with online schools or charter schools and see them as competitors. They saw that as an affront also to their profession, and said, boy, I wouldn't want that happening to me. That's terrible that happened to them. So I think even those on the right and left side of this issue, people saw that this was not handled appropriately and that there really was it seemed like a vindictive effort to shut this particular school down, which actually was Ohio's largest online school. 12,000 students were talking about ECOD. Now, of course, what's happened in the months of those that you not reading in the newspapers, most of it in the Columbus Dispatch, it played out in a drama, the auctioning of the facilities, the building, and all of that. So ECOD is essentially no more. What is left is a court decision. Now, the one that came down favorably that they are clear to appeal the $60 million in repayments back to the state. And again, that happened because they changed the rules on them in the middle of a school year. And so it's like you wake up one day and you find yourself out of compliance of the law. And then they start back-charging you all this money, folks, and that's what we're talking about here. The case is before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court really has to come down on the side of ECOT. In spite of the barrage of the negative articles in the media, the liberal media, the Dayton Daily News, the Toledo Blade, the Columbus Dispatch, the list is endless, that have been beating up on ECOT now for 2 full years, it runs against their narrative. By the way, they barely forced themselves to write this article of this case that went on the side of ECOT because it makes their narrative look ridiculous, which it is. If the court, the Supreme Court, comes down the side of ECOT saying that you cannot make rule in the middle of the road, basically, you can't make retroactive law and then find people out of compliance, which, by the way, they're going to have to decide that because it has so many implications for so many other applicable areas of law and business within our state. It would open up Pandora's box. Representative Thompson, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I would say this is an unfortunate chapter in the state of Ohio. I think this administration has gotten a lot of things wrong on education. We don't have enough time to count them all off. But, you know, 512 is another piece of legislation they have that they're bringing forward. So just a lot of, I would say, more politics than good policy, more, you know, personal agendas, more, you know, just insider fighting and folks just trying to take out, you know, take out their anger on, you know, they're just, you know, kind of picking patsies and they're picking folks that they can go after. And so it's just a very unfortunate timing. And fundamentally, the kids caught in the crossfire. It's terrible. And I hope that, you know, that we do get a good decision from the Ohio Supreme Court that recognizes what this appeals court has found as well and gives ECOT an ability to kind of rectify the situation because it's been, I think, tragic and it's been a very unfortunate outcome.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Representative Brenner, you've been warning that this is actually an assault on school choices. We have it in Ohio with charter schools, online schools. Even homeschoolers realize that they might find themselves out of compliance if the rules change in the middle of the stream. So this has woken up a sleeping giant, as it were, and you forecasted that. You were prophesying, saying, hey, we got a problem here. And people have woken up to the fact and said, hey, you know what? He's absolutely right. We have a problem here. Now, this, if the court comes down with a favorable decision, it may not save ECOT, but it certainly is going to save the rest of these online and charter schools. Your thoughts, Representative Brenner?
Yes, exactly. In fact, I guess all these entities, especially I know Richard Cordray has been adamantly hounding, and the Democrat Party have been hounding ECOT and just beating it up. Well, they're beating it up because they want a way in to basically wipe out a lot of school choice. They don't want to admit that, but you know, they say that they want school choice to include, you know, they should all have, you know, more transparency and more regulations and so forth. Well, they want to make them just like the traditional public schools, which they're not, and that's just not acceptable. And it's one of those things where if they get their way here, they're going to continue pushing. And so that's what we've got to push back. And anybody who's a homeschooler in favor of school choice, they need to speak up. And they need to speak up at the ballot box this November as well.
Absolutely. Because really, we've progressed as far as school choice in Ohio. But this has been school choices on a retreat. Everybody begins to understand that. I've been speaking to groups around the state. I know you have as well. The concern is there. The concern is real. And we need to let our legislators know just how we feel about school choice options in Ohio, that we like the opportunity to have school choice. We want to keep it going. We don't want there to be a redress or a retreat of school choice. Representative Thompson, your thoughts.
I very much agree with you, Chris. And I think, you know, we've still got the problem of Common Core. It's the bland leading the bland. I mean, they're trying to make everybody equally mediocre in this state. And that's why school choice plays an important role. I would like for the folks who are advocates for school choice to realize that Common Core needs to go. And I think we can make things better for parents and students in this state as we kind of extract our state from these ill-conceived ideas. And so we've got a lot of work to do. I'm not going to be around to help with it, at least in my official capacity. But I hope Representative Brenner, and if he becomes Senator Brenner, will lead the fight to rectify all these problems that we face.
Well, thank you both, Representative Thompson, Representative Brenner, for coming on the program today. Thank you for taking a stand for these kids and for school choice in Ohio. We applaud you both, and we'll be waiting with anticipation as what the state Supreme Court is going to decide on this case, and we'll have you back on to comment once the decision does come down. If you missed any of today's program, please log on to our website at ohioca.org. You'll also see the articles about the ECOT, also what we discussed today, and some updates. Gentlemen, thank you both for being my guest today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both, and we'll be giving you all an update as to how this progresses, and we should find out something very soon. Thanks for listening. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.